So we left off on text 4, and we're speaking about Bhima yesterday. And we were describing one of the stories from the Gita Mahatmya in the Padma Purana, which glorifies this chapter, studying this chapter. It's mentioned there that anyone who recites the verses of the chapter daily, or one verse, or even one pada, or studies the chapter, then he gets... He transcends the ocean of material birth and death and attains the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And Parvati had approached Mahadev and said that you have already enlightened me with Vedic knowledge, and now I've understood the glories of Lord Krishna, so please explain to me the glories of the Bhagavad Gita. And Mahadev agreed. He said that once, after killing the Mora demon, that Lord Vishnu was resting on Ananta Shesh, and Lakshmi Devi had approached him very submissively and respectfully with folded hands, and asked him, that, "My dear Lord, you are the Lord of the universe, and why are you lying here, sleeping unhappily?" And he said, "Oh, no, I'm not sleeping. I am meditating on my wonderful energies, how magnificent they are, and how they are controlling the material universe, all of the universes." And she inquired further that, "Please tell me, how do your energies work?" And he said that, "Only one with pure intelligence can understand this. And these, my energies are fully described in Bhagavad Gita." And then she said that, she asked further that, "But if you're the Supreme Lord, and if you're lying here meditating and in awe and reverence, and trying to understand your own energies, then how could they be explained fully in Bhagavad Gita?" And he said that, "Because I have incarnated as a Bhagavad Gita. That the first five chapters are my five heads. The next 10 chapters are my five arms. The 16th chapter is my stomach. And the last two chapters are my lotus feet." And that anyone who studies or recites the Bhagavad Gita, then he will get the same benefit or attain the same destination as Susharma. So then naturally Lakshmi Devi asked that, "Well, who was this Susharma and what destination did he attain? What result did he attain?" So he began to explain that actually Susharma was a very wicked man. Although born in a Brahmin family, he never performed any pious activities, and he was very cruel, and he enjoyed harming other people. He never performed any of his religious activities. He never chanted my name. He never gave anything in charity. In fact, he used to enjoy drinking wine and eating flesh. And that he would maintain himself by collecting leaves and selling them in the marketplace. And one day he was collecting leaves in the garden of some rishi in nearby his hermitage. He had some garden. And in that place a snake bit him and he died. So he took birth after suffering in hell for countless births. He was reborn on the earth as a bull. And that bull was purchased by one crippled man And the crippled man was very hard on the bull. He would force the bull to carry very big, heavy loads. And he would beat him. And after 7-8 years of working hard every day under the stick of this crippled man, one day the man had loaded up a huge weight on the bull and was making him go very fast. So the bull just fell unconscious on the side of the road. So many people in the town, they came because they were curious that what happened to the bull. And one man, he remembered some pious activities that he had performed, and he offered the results of that punya to the bull. And that inspired another person to offer the pious results of his activities to the bull. And in that crowd, other people started offering the results of their pious activities. In that crowd, there was one prostitute who started thinking, have I ever performed any pious activities? Well, if I have performed any pious activities, then I offer that to you, my dear bull. And then the bull died, and the soul of that bull, who was originally Susharma, went to Yamaloka. And Yamaraj announced that, my dear sir, now you are completely free from all of your sins, and you will take birth in a high Brahmin family, because you have been freed from all of your sins because of the pious activities which was offered by the prostitute who was there before you died. So then that Susharma took birth in a high Brahmin family on the earth again, and he could remember his past lives. So when he grew up, when he was a young boy, as soon as he could get around, then he decided that he would find the house of this, he would find this prostitute somehow or other. So he searched and searched, and he finally found the house of this prostitute, and he went there. He knocked on the door, and the lady answered, and he explained that, in my last life I was this bull, you offered your pious activities to me, and that purified me from all of my sins. Now, what exactly was it that you did? What pious activities did you perform that was so powerful that freed me from all of my sins? So the lady said, please come in. And she brought him to the back room, and she pointed into the corner of the room where there was a cage with a bird, a parrot. And she said, you see that bird? And they both looked. And she said, this bird every day recites something. From hearing that recitation, I have become purified. And he was very interested, so he went. They both walked closer to the bird cage. And they were looking in at the bird. And the bird looked at them. And then the bird started speaking. He said, I was a Brahmin also in my last life. But I was very proud. And he said, I was insulting the other Brahmins. So therefore, I took birth as a parrot in this body. And when I was born, my mother and father died when I was a baby and left me in the hot sands of the desert. And some rishis came along and they felt sorry for me. So they picked me up and they brought me to their ashram and put me in a cage there. And the children of those rishis, they were daily reciting the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And I began reciting it along with them every day for a long time. And then after some time, they sold me to this pious lady here, referring to the prostitute. And so now it was the recitation, so I'm reciting this first chapter of the Gita, and she's hearing it, and it was from that that you were purified from all of your sins. So all of them were feeling great ecstasy, and they began glorifying the Bhagavad Gita. And gradually, Susharma went home, and individually, all of them continued to recite the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita daily. And at the end of their lives, they all went back to Godhead. So the Padma Purana mentions that anyone who studies this first chapter or recites it daily, even one verse or one pada, then he transcends samsara and attains the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So that is the potency of this studying this book. And of course in the Gita Mahatmya there's such a story for every chapter. But we won't have time to tell you all of them. But I thought that it would be nice to at least begin our seminar with this understanding. Okay. So we're in the Duryodhana Gita, right? Sanjaya is speaking to Dhritarashtra, and he is describing that Duryodhana went to Dronacharya and began to speak, and he said, spoke verse 3 and then verse 4. And he is describing the Pandava army, that in this army there are many great warriors, like equal to Bhima and Arjuna, great persons like Virat, Drupad, and Yuyudhan. So, we describe some of Bhima's greatness, and I think all of you know how powerful Arjuna was, greatly feared by Duryodhana and the whole Kaurava host, including Bhishma and Duryodhana himself, and even Dronacharya, because they knew that Arjuna was the most precise archer, that he could even shoot, what he's called Sabyasachi, means he could shoot with both hands, right and left hand, ambidextrous, as we say. And even at night he could fight. And he knew all of the divine astras, that he fought with Mahadev, Shiva, and pleased Lord Shiva, and received special weapons from him. And also he was invited by Indradev when the Nivata Kavacha demons were attacking Indraloka. Then Indra invited him, and he went there to the heavens, and he was again given the Devadatta conch, which is mentioned here, and he received further training and further astras and blessings by Indra. They also know that just previous to the battle, in the last year, the Pandavas in their exile, that they were incognito in Virat's kingdom. So Duryodhana, understanding that they were present there, had gone there as a kind of, you know, just looking over the kingdom. But then they actually attacked Virat's city, and all of the big warriors in Virat's, including Virat himself, went to face the Kaurava army, but attacking from the great generals left in the city, except for Uttar Kumar, which was the Virat's young son, who was something like that. He was a young boy, and he never really forced. Nobody expected that he was Arjuna, because he was effeminate, you know. And but when they realized that there was another attack from the other side of the city by the Kaurava generals, then Yudhisthira, who was Kanka at that time, incognito as a minister of Virat, mentioned that Brihadnala was an excellent charioteer. Because Uttar Kumar was saying that, I would like to go out and fight. I'm a Kshatriya, and I could defeat all of them. But I have no chariot driver. What can I do? I'll just stay here. And then Kanka Yudhisthira said, no, Priyatnala, he used to drive the chariot for Arjuna. You know, I said, really, really? Him? He's got to be joking. He said, yes, he's a great charioteer. I said, okay, let's try. So then they got on the chariot and they drove out to meet that Kaurava host. And when they came within sight of the Kaurava generals, then Kumar saw the form of Bhishma with his white flowing beard, you know, blowing in the wind. And Drona, a powerful Dronacharya, and Kripacharya, and Ashwatthama, and Duryodhan, and they were all lined up. And when he saw them, then all of the information which he had heard about all of these great persons that he had never met before began to enter into his heart, and he began shivering in fright. He realized that he couldn't fight them, and that he was simply a proud boy, and he jumped off of the chariot and just ran away. You know. And so Brihadnala jumped off the chariot and ran after him. And the warriors were watching and they were thinking, what is this going on there? You know? What's this person, you know? Someone has approached us and then he runs away and the charioteer is driven. So Brihadnala had captured Uttar Kumar. And he said, you must fight. You're a Kshatriya. You can never run from your battle. This is your dharma. And he said, no, I can't fight them. I would rather die. How can you say that? You're a Kshatriya. You're the son of King Virat, who's a powerful Maharati. And he said, I don't care. I don't care what people will accuse you and they will laugh at you. He says, I don't care. I would rather die. I'll just leave the... He said, no, you must fight them. He said, I don't care. Brihadnala said, if you don't fight them, then you drive the chariot and I'll fight them. And then Kumar said, what? You'll fight them? And then he said, yes, because I am Pandava Arjuna. And then he said, if you're Pandava Arjuna, then recite the 10 names of Arjuna. And Arjuna immediately snapped off the 10 names. And then he said, are you really Arjuna? He said, yes, we have come to your kingdom incognito. And we hid all of our weapons, including my Gandiva bow, up in that Shami tree. And it was wrapped up in leather, as if it was a corpse, and it was hanging. It was very close by where they were. So he pointed, he said, that is where our celestial weapons are. You go up there and bring that package. So he climbed the tree, he brought this huge package down, opened it, and there was this effulgence coming from the weapons of the Gandiva bow and the swords of the Pandavas. So he picked up his Gandiva bow and he immediately strung it. And they said, all right, now you drive and I'll fight them. And he had his quiver, he had his Gandiva bow. They jumped up, they ran back to the chariot. They jumped on the chariot and Arjuna took his Gandiva bow and made this twanging sound. And Dronacharya said, ah, I know that sound. He said, that's the Gandiva bow. But who is this effeminate person who has shoulders like Arjuna? I know that person. Is it? It's Arjuna. And then he became shocked. And he realized what was happening. And Arjuna came forward in the chariot. And he shot two arrows. And one landed right in front of Bhishma and right in front of Drona as his salutation. Pranam Guru Maharaj. Bhishma. They saw. And Drona said to Bhishma, that's Arjuna. And he said, no, it couldn't be. Yes, you've heard that sound, that only the sound of that Gandiva bow can make such sound. Only Arjuna's Gandiva bow. And he said, really? We're fighting with Arjuna? So Arjuna attacked all of these big generals in the Kaurava army. And he started shooting off the flagstaff of Bhishma's flagstaff and knocked off his bow. And then shot up his charioteer and all of his horses. And then he went towards Dronacharya. The same thing. He knocked off his bow. He picked up another bow. He broke the bowstring. And then he picked up another bow. He broke that one also. He broke off the flag from his chariot and then shot the horses. And then Drona was completely helpless. And then he did the same. He defeated Ashwatthama. And then Duryodhana had no chance. Immediately shot Duryodhana with arrows and he couldn't even move. He pinned them against his own chariot. And then finally, Arjuna pulled out a special arrow, pulled it back, chanted some mantras of the Swapna Astra, and sent it up into the sky. Went high into the sky. And then some cloud came down upon the whole scene. And everybody just went to sleep on their chariot. All the generals were just hanging off of their chariot like this. And then he just went forward and picked their chatters, you know, which he promised to bring to Uttara. And then he went back to the kingdom like that. So, you know, Duryodhana realized, and all of them, Drona, they realized how powerful was Arjuna. So here, Duryodhana is saying that there are many great bowmen that are equal to Arjuna. Drona, Sabdhan, be careful. You must fight with all your strength. So this is the diplomacy and the cleverness of Duryodhana being mentioned here in these different verses. There are also the great heroic powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chekitana, Kashiraj, Purujit, Kuntipoj, and Shaibyan. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamalja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. They're all Maharatis. So they can fight with 11,000 soldiers at one time, single-handedly. So he's glorifying the power of the Pandava army. Of course, you know the son of Subhadra. Who's that? Abhimanyu. Right. He's also the son of Arjuna. And we know what he did later in the battle also. He stood up against all of the generals and he also defeated them. But then they killed him unfairly. So now, Duryodhana diverts the attention of Dronacharya to his own army. Asmakam tu vishishta yi tanu bodha vijotamaha nayaka mama sanyasya samgartam tan brahimite. But for your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. So, asmakam, right? Vashishta ye, our especially powerful army. Please take note of it, O best of the Brahmins. Now he says that mama sanyasa. So, as father, like son, Dhritarashtra said mama ka pandavastra. So now his son is saying mama sanyasa. It's exhibiting his false ego. This is my army. He's also the epitome of materialistic consciousness and material duality. He's thinking this is his army, his false ego. And now, other great generals are nearby listening to the words of Duryodhana. So therefore, Duryodhana has to very carefully choose who he will speak, because the order, according to the etiquette of the Kshatriyas, the most powerful fighter should be, and the most senior person should be mentioned first. And Bhishma is listening to what he's saying. And the other Ashwatthama and the other generals were there, other great fighters. So, but at the same time, Drona is there. So who will he say first? If he says Bhishma's name first, then Drona might feel discouraged. And if he says Drona's name first, then maybe the others... No, he considers that, because Drona is a Brahmana, so therefore Bhishma won't mind if I say his name first. But if I say Bhishma's name first, Drona might mind. He may feel discouraged. So I'll say Drona's... So he says, Bhavan Bhishmash Chakarnascha. Right? Bhavan means yourself. He's addressing Drona. Therefore, Drona gets the first position in the list. And so Bhishma is not disturbed by that, because Drona is a Brahmana, and the Brahmana must be given respect higher than the Kshatriya. So he says, Karnascha, Kripascha, Samitinjaya. They're always victorious in battle. Ashwatthama, Vikarnascha. Hey, how did Vikarna get in that list? He's not a Maharati. So it's mentioned that Vikarna was the only one of all of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra who stood up against Duryodhana in the disrobing of Draupadi, because Vikarna had some morality and righteousness within his heart. So he could understand that this was improper. But everyone else was frightened of Duryodhana. But Vikarna stood up in Mahabharata. We see that he stood up and was not afraid of Duryodhana. And he said that this is, what you're doing is irreligious, adharmic, that she is the daughter of the Kaurava race, of the Kuru dynasty, and you are insulting her. This will cause great havoc in our dynasty. And Duryodhana just passed off his comments. So Duryodhana is very concerned that he knows that Vikarna may leave and defect from his army and go to the Pandava army. Because before they begin the battle, they make an announcement that if anyone wants to leave the battle and join our side, like Yudhishthira said, then you please come now. So he, expecting that, and knowing that Vikarna, suspecting that he might have some loyalty towards the Pandavas because of that, because of the way he acted in the assembly hall. Therefore, he puts his name in this list to ensure that he feels encouraged and attached to the Kaurava army. Text number 9. Anye cha bahava shura mat arte chapta jivitaha nana shastra baharana sarve yudha visharadaha. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. So not only those great generals, but there are many others. Anyecha bhava shura. And those persons are devoted to me. Madarte. my purpose, 적대지입니다. They're willing to give up their very lives for me. So this is what is called a harbinger or a kind of omen. I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that Saraswati entered onto Duryodhana's tongue and made him speak these words. Because we know that in the 11th chapter, Krishna says that they're already killed by me. And you, Savyasachi, just become my instrument. So this is a foreshadowing in drama when there's a slight hint of what's going to happen in the future. This is very, it's a kind of dramatic ornament in drama. So we see here, this is a kind of omen or foreshadowing of the future events, that all of them will actually give up their lives for Duryodhana. What is, the indicating that his army had already been destroyed. And Prabhupada mentions, in other words, it is already concluded that all of them would die in the battle of Kurukshetra for joining the party of the sinful Duryodhana. And so Prabhupada echoes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment in this purport. Now, text 10. Duryodhana continues with his diplomatic speech to his acharya. Aparyaptam tadasmakam ballam bhishma virakshitam paryaptam tridam etesham ballam bhima virakshitam. Our strength is immeasurable and we are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. So, we have an interesting point here in the word aparyaptam, or paryaptam, which comes twice here. The general meaning is immeasurable. And this is mentioned by Baladeva Nibhushan also. So Prabhupada echoes him in his commentary. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the word can also mean insufficient. In other words, our strength is insufficient. Why? Because we're protected by Bhishma, who is half with the Pandava side. He has loyalties and is actually, especially for Arjuna, he loves Arjuna very much. So therefore it's dangerous. But Bhima, although he's less in strength, but he's fully devoted and determined to kill all of us. So therefore, the Pandava army is paryaptam, which means the opposite, that they're, sufficiently endowed like this. So, since the word can be taken two ways, it indicates that Bhishma will hear it as our strength is immeasurable because I'm here. And Drona may hear it in a different, and the other generals or the other warriors will hear it in a different way. That yes, our strength is insufficient because Bhishma is here. And he is divided. His heart is divided. So, like this. Prabhupada comments, Duryodhana was always envious of Bhima because he knew perfectly well that if he should die at all, he would only be killed by Bhima. But at the same time, he was confident of the victory on account of the presence of Bhishma, who is a far superior general. His conclusion that he would come out of the battle victorious was well ascertained. So that's based on Baladev's and the general meaning of the word aparyaptam. Text 11.
Ayunishu cha sarveshu yatha bhagam avasthitaha bishvam eva virakshantu bhavanta sarva evahi.
All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. So either way, you can draw this conclusion. Right now, so you must now give full support to Bhishma. Now, Prabhupada mentions in his commentary that it could be understood that because he's an old man, that we should protect him. And also that because he's the most valuable and most powerful and important fighter. So obviously, Bhishma will be hearing it in such a way. And the other generals can take it in the way that they like. That's why Duryodhana is very... He's the king. He's very expert at diplomacy. He's trying to inspire and encourage all of the Kshatriyas who all have a kind of individual Kshatriya pride about their own prowess. Right? Huh? One second, let me finish. Okay. Huh? I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying.
The 10th verse, last sentence.
Okay, let's get to the purport. So Vishnu Chakravarti says that Krishna, Duryodhana is saying that divide yourself amongst the phalanx entrances and do not leave your assigned areas. Thus, Bhishma won't be killed from behind while fighting the enemy. Right now, Bhima's strength is our very life. That is the understanding about the phalanx, you know, the points of the of entrance of the phalanxes of the army. Prabhupada comments, Duryodhana, after praising the prowess of Bhishma, further considered that others might think that they had been considered less important. So in his usual diplomatic way, he tried to adjust the situation in the above words. He emphasized that Bhishma Dev was undoubtedly the greatest hero, but he was an old man, so everyone must especially think of his protection from all sides. So sometimes the enemy would enter into the army, and then while Bhishma would be out fighting someone, they may try to kill him from behind. Like this. So Duryodhana was afraid that that might happen. Prabhupada continues, he might become engaged in the fight and the enemy might take advantage of his full engagement on one side. Therefore, it was important that other heroes not leave their strategic position and allow the enemy to break the phalanx. Duryodhana clearly felt that the victory of the Kurus depended on the presence of Bhishma Dev. He was confident of the full support of Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya in the battle because he well knew that they did not even speak a word when Arjuna's wife Draupadi, in her helpless condition, had appealed to them for justice while she was being forced to appear naked in the presence of all the great generals in the assembly. Although he knew that the two generals had some sort of affection for the Pandavas, he hoped that these generals would now completely give it up as they had done during the gambling performances. Now, sometimes devotees may consider that Bhishma is a Mahajan. So, how could he sit there and allow such an irreligious thing to happen? Right? So, but the understanding is that Bhishma's view of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Sri Krishna, is one with Aishwarya Gyan Mishra Bhakti. In other words, he fully is understanding the potency and divinity of Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So, understanding that Draupadi is a pure devotee, he knew very well that Krishna will come and protect her, and that is Krishna's pastime. So therefore, he didn't, knowing full well that Krishna will come, that he refrained from speaking anything. Text number 12. Tasya sanjayanam harsham kuru vreda pitamaha singanadam vinanyo chaye shankam dadmo pratapavan. Then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making it sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhana joy. So Prabhupada comments that Bhishma understood Duryodhana's heart and that he was feeling uncomfortable and fearful of the Pandava army, looking at the powerful phalanxes of the Pandava army, which, by the way, was 7 Akshahinis, and the Kauravas was 11, so that makes 18. So sometimes devotees try to understand why there's the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, right? The battle was also 18 days, and it's understood that the Bhagavad Gita is blessed with all of the 18 departments of knowledge given in all of the Vedas. So therefore, it is like the nectar of all of the Vedic knowledge. That's why it was mentioned by Sankirtan Prabhu that at one point, when Prabhupada was in Jhansi, he was telling that with this one book, we can get everything. Because all of the 18 departments of knowledge, the 18 vidyas, are all present in the Bhagavad Gita. That means there's the 4 Vedas and the 6 Vedangas. That means 10. Then the Ayurveda, Dhanurveda, and Gandharva Veda. That's 13. Then there's the Artha Shastra and Dharma Shastra. That's 15. Then there's Nyaya, Purana, and Mimamsa. All of these 18 departments of knowledge are in the Bhagavad Gita. So you have different reasons why we have 18 chapters. It does have some kind of esoteric representation. Other than the fact that Krishna had, the Lord had appeared with 5 heads, 10 arms, 2 legs, and a stomach. Right, this is the incarnation of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Bhishma was a pure devotee in Viryaras. Actually, his Ishtadev is Lord Narayan. He realizes that Krishna is the supreme Narayan and wants to have a virya or a chivalrous relationship, which he gets. And this is one of the many reasons why Bhishma is on the opposite side. Because Prabhupada explains in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that Bhishma's position was superior to Arjuna because Arjuna was behind the Lord and he couldn't see the features of the Lord's face being covered with the dust from the battlefield in his hair, his eyelids, on his cheeks and lips, and the various cuts from the arrows in his body which was creating wounds with blood on the beautiful sham-colored body of the Lord, which was also covered with dust and little, you know, wounds of blood. And for Bhishma, this was a great udipan, or stimulus for his prema bhakti. So Bhishma got the full darshan of the Lord in that, at least for the first 10 days of the battle. Whereas Arjuna was behind him and was not able to appreciate those. But in other words, the Lord assumes the form minirya vibhagena nilapita dipiryutaha rupam bhedam avapnoti jnanavira tathachuta. According to the meditational ecstasy of the devotee, the Lord assumes a particular form. Just like the minirya vibhagena, just like the special jewel, the Indranilamani, or Nilamani, when you put it on red, it becomes red. When you put it on yellow, it becomes yellow. When you put it on saffron, it becomes saffron. It assumes the color of a particular object. So the Lord also assumes a different, slightly different form according to the heart of each and every individual devotee. So therefore, Bhishma's love invoked the Lord for various reasons. The Lord, for many different reasons, the Lord took the position as the charioteer of Arjuna, and one of them was to have his ras with Bhishma Dev on the battlefield. So this was a great opportunity for Bhishma Dev. So realizing that he is actually fighting against God, Bhishma blows his conch shell, and inside his mind he's thinking that that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and victory or defeat is in His hands. Therefore, I am blowing my conch shell now so that I can hear His conch shell. And as a Kshatriya, I am ready to give my life. Like this. So Bhishma was aware that he's going to lose the battle. But he was sacrificing his life on the battle out of duty. He had made a vow to always support whoever sat on the throne at Hastinapur, and to his father, to Ganga, to his mother, who was concerned about that. Because when he made this vow to never have a child, to never marry, then his mother was very concerned. So he made this vow that I will support the king. Of course, at that time, he never even could imagine that someone as evil as Duryodhana could have actually took the throne as emperor of the earth at Hastinapur. So out of his vow, right, he made this promise to his mother. Therefore, he kept his promise, even though it was so painful for him to fight against Krishna and the Pandavas, who he understood were fighting in the name of righteousness. And he was fighting with Duryodhana, who is sin personified. But still, he performed his duty. So he officially now begins the battle, right? In this text 12. He's called Kuru Vridha. He's the senior most person on the battlefield, the senior member of the Kuru dynasty, Pitamaha, the great grandfather, grandsire. And he blows his conch shell, which is like a lion. Prabhupada comments that indirectly, by the symbolism of the conch shell, he informed his depressed Duryodhana, his grandson Duryodhana, that he had no chance of victory in the battle because the Supreme Lord Krishna was on the other side. But still, it was his duty to conduct the fight, and no pains would be spared in that connection. That means he'd be ready to die. Tatta shankasya bhiryascha panavanaka gomukha sahasaivabhyaham yanta sashabdhastumalo bhava. After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. Please note the word tumalo, which in English is tumultuous. Very interesting. Tatta shvetir harir yukte mahati sandane stitau marava pandavaschaiva divyur shankha paradmatu. It's the first time Krishna's name is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. So they responds, as is usually done. You know, the elder on the battlefield blows the conch, and then from one side, the other side, they respond. So Madhava also indicates victory, because Madhava is the husband of the goddess of fortune. So all fortune and victory will be present on the Pandava side. And we see that Arjuna is stationed on his chariot with white horses. And he's with his Gandiva bow and his transcendental quiver. Though all of these were given to him by Agnidev. And this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, actually. In the 58th chapter of the 10th canto, text 26, Gandiva, or the bow, horses, chariot, two inexhaustible quivers, and his armor, which was impenetrable. They're all given by Agni. So this also indicates the victory of the Pandava army. And if you look, you'll find many, many indications of victory. Maybe some of you can mention some of the others, if you can see, as we go along. Someone else? What are the other signs of victory? Which are? The Pashu Patastra, given by Mahadev to, right? The flag with Hanuman. Yes. What else?
Husband of God's opportunity.
Yeah, his name is Madhava. And they're on the Dharma Kshetra Kurukshetra. What else? The obvious one. Well, yeah, Madhava's there, Krishna's there. What else?
Divya Shankar is there.
Yeah, transcendental conscience. In other words, those conch shells, especially we know Krishna's has his transcendental conch shell, also very powerful. That is the, what's his name? Huh? Panchajanya, right? Was the shell of the demon, Panchajanya. When Krishna was searching for the sons of his teacher, went to Varuna's kingdom in the water, right? And this Devadatta was given by Agni, so their conch shells are not ordinary. And it shattered the hearts, it trembled. The Kaurava army were trembling in fear when they heard it. But the same thing didn't happen from the Kaurava conch shells. So there's some foreshadowing there as well. Anything else you see?
Just like Agni conquers all the direction.
Who does?
Agni conquers all the direction, the chariot given by Agni.
Mm. Right. Okay. Yeah, because Agni gave all of these weapons to Arjuna. His horses also. Four white horses. Right. Okay.
Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dhatma Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vripo Naraha.
Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Paundra. So here, Arjuna is also mentioned as Dhananjaya, because he was sent by Yudhisthira to the north to acquire treasures for the Rajasuya Yajna. Right? So, of course, that... That is That is when they were living in Indraprastha, right? So that's before the battle. And Bhima was sent to the east, to Bengal. There he met one king. What was his name again? You remember? He fought one Bengali king. Indra, what was his name? Indrasen, something. Anyway, maybe I'll remember. Then the twins went west and south. So Arjuna came back with a lot of wealth. Actually, they all conquered and helped Yudhisthira to perform this yajna. That was one of the reasons why Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana became envious, because they gave them an insignificant portion of the kingdom. And then later, by the mercy of Indra and the Pandavas' piety, they brought about such opulence in Indraprastha that Duryodhana became envious when he went to their assembly hall and saw how beautiful it was. And of course, Draupadi's laughing at him, you know, didn't help when he fell into the water. You know. So he's called Dhananjaya, the winner of wealth. This is also indicates some victory, because he was so victorious in conquering all of the kings throughout the whole subcontinent. And Bharat was bigger at that time than it is now, and included many other countries. Okay. King Yudhisthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay, and Nakul and Sahadev blew the Sukosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virat, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupad, the sons of Draupadi, and the others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. So there is some indication also that we notice here that certain persons get their conch shell named and that certain persons don't. So the ones who have their conch shells named actually lived and survived the battle, whereas the other ones who just mentioned that, you know, they also blew their conch shells, they all died, except for one person, Satyaki, because he was unconquerable. But there is some indication there, perhaps by Vyasadeva himself, in this regard. And Prabhupada seems to echo this idea in his commentary. He writes, beginning with the grandsire of Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including kings from many states of the world, all were present there and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra, because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons. Sagosho dhatarastranam rinayani vyadarayat nabascha prithivim chaiva tumalo vyananandayan. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Another omen. 20. Atyavyavastitan drishtva dhartarastran kapidvajaha pravritte shastra sampate dhanur udyam nyapanavaha rishikesham tada vakyam idam aha mahipate. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. So here we have Kapidvaja, the name for Arjuna, because he has the famed Hanuman on his flag. So Dvaja means flag. And there's two histories in this regard. One is that once Arjuna was strolling along the river, and there was a huge monkey bowing down to him, offering his pranam. So Arjuna asked, "Who are you?" And he said that, "I am Hanuman, the servant of Sri Ram." And Arjuna questioned further. He said, "Are you the Hanuman? Are you the servant of that same Sri Ram that was unable to build a bridge to Lanka, and then had to ask the monkey soldiers to build it for him? You're that same servant of Ram?" And he said that, "If I was there, if I had been there, I would have, with my Gandiva bow, shot many arrows and built a very strong bridge in which the entire army of Ram crossed over to Lanka." And then Hanuman said very politely, "Dear Arjuna, that it's very wonderful that you would create such a bridge, but I believe that your bridge will not be able to hold even the smallest of the monkeys in that army." And then Arjuna said, "Then just watch." And he created this bridge across the river. And he said, "You can jump on this bridge holding the heaviest things that you can find." So immediately Hanuman assumed a huge form, the same form that he assumed when he jumped to Lanka. And he jumped to the Himalayas. And he came back with all of these heavy stones tied on every hair of his body to make more weight. And then he came to that Arjuna's bridge, which was made from arrows, and he put one foot on it, and the whole bridge started trembling. And Arjuna's heart also started trembling in fear that, "Oh, my bridge is going to be broken by this huge monkey." And he started praying to his Ishtadev, Lord Krishna. He said, "Please, reputation of the Pandavas is at stake. Please, make the bridge strong." So then Hanuman put both of his feet on this bridge with all of the stones and all of his weight. And somehow the bridge held him up. And Hanuman was shocked. He said, "Oh, that's just made of arrows and it's holding me and all of this weight." And while he was looking down, he saw that as the water was coming from under the bridge, from where the bridge was, there was some blood in the river. So he thought, "What's that? What's down there?" And he jumped off of the bridge and he looked, and then he saw his worshipable Lord Sri Ramachandra holding up the bridge with his back, with all of the arrows coming in his back, creating blood. And he said, "Oh, my worshipable Lord Ram, how is it you're holding up the bridge?" Like this. And Lord Ram, came out and said, "Yes, this my devotee Arjuna has created this bridge, and therefore I'm supporting him." So, and he said that actually Arjuna saw the Lord as Krishna, and Hanuman saw the Lord as Ram. Of course, as I said, the Lord assumes different forms according to the meditation of the devotee. So then the Lord spoke to them, and he said that, "You are both my dearmost servants, and I want you to become friends now." And he said that in the future, in the very near future, he said, a battle will take place, and Hanuman will enter onto Arjuna's flag, and in this way assist in the battle. So it's because of this reason that Hanuman has taken this position on the flag of Arjuna. And there's another pastime in Mahabharata when Arjuna went to the heavens to help his father Indra. The Pandavas were roaming in the mountainous regions, near the Alakananda River. And at that time, in the river came floating a beautiful Sahasradal Kamal, a thousand-petaled lotus, which smelled very fragrant. And Draupadi, seeing and smelling this beautiful lotus, she wanted more she said, well, we should offer this to Yudhisthira, but it would be nice if we had more of these. So, Bhima, can you get more of them? You go upstream, up the river, up the mountain, and find more of these lotuses. Please, you please find them. But no mortals were allowed in that place. But, of course, Bhima didn't care about that. And he wasn't an ordinary mortal. Anyway, so he jumped up the mountain, and he was roaring and ripping up trees along the way and scaring the lions and tigers who were there. And then he came to one pathway where there was a huge monkey lying there. And his tail was lying across the way. So Bhima said, move aside. I'm going up the mountain. And Hanuman said, oh, I cannot move aside. Said, I'm very old and I cannot move. And then Bhima said, oh, you must move. I will not step over you because of the etiquette. But you move your tail out of the way. Said, oh, I'm very old. I cannot. I'm an old monkey. I cannot move my tail. You move it if you can. And then Bhima said, all right then. Said, he came and he grabbed the tail. And he was straining. And he couldn't budge it even an inch. And then he realized he's not an ordinary monkey. He said, my dear sir, who are you? And he said, I am Hanuman, the servant of Ram. He said, you are Hanuman. He said, I am Bhima, the son of Vayu. And he said, I am also the son of Vayu. So then Hanuman embraced Bhima. He realized that he had met his brother. And then Hanuman said that, I will appear on the flag of your brother during the battle. And when you scream your war screams, I will also scream. And my scream will join yours. And in this way, create fear in the enemy camp. Like this. So he vowed to assist. And he said that, so in this way I will assist you. And you will definitely be victorious and win back your kingdom. Like this, so he got a blessing from Hanuman. So here, Arjuna is called Kapidvaja. And this, as we said, is one of the important omens indicating victory for the Pandava army. Also significant is the fact that Dhanur Udyamya Pandava, that Arjuna, at this point, picks up his Gandiva bow. And he's ready to fight. And then, in the next verse, what happens? He says, Arjuna vacha senayor ubhayor madhye ratham stappaya mechutam yavad etannarikshaham yodhu kamangavastitam kirmaya saha yodhavyam asmin rana samudyame. Arjuna said, O infallible one, Achyuta, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. So of course, it wasn't that Arjuna was afraid, because Krishna, Prabhupada mentions that he was desiring to see, Prabhupada mentions in the commentary to text 23, he wanted to see them, all the persons who had joined the sort of Duryodhana must have been birds of the same feather, like Duryodhana. Because he says it was an open secret that Duryodhana wanted to usurp the kingdom of the Pandavas by evil plans. I'm reading from 23. In collaboration with his father, Dhritarashtra. Therefore, all persons who had joined the sign of Duryodhana must have been birds of the same feather. Arjuna wanted to see them on the battlefield before the fight was begun, just to learn who they were. But he had no intention of proposing peace negotiations with them. It was also a fact he wanted to see them to make an estimate of the strength which he had to face, although he was quite confident about his victory. And in the commentaries of the previous acharyas, they mentioned that Krishna says to Arjuna, but you'll just see your friends and make friends, like you'll fall in love with your relatives and friends. And he says, no, I just want to see who has come to fight, just to estimate the power of the army and to see who is actually going to assist the evil Duryodhana, who is of the same ilk as that evil person. The name Achyuta means infallible. Now, other than the fact that Krishna doesn't fall down, it means that he's infallible in his love and affection for his devotees. So this word Achyuta indicates Vatsalya bhav. He never fails, Prabhupada writes, he never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed herein as infallible. So, Bhaktivat, Krishna is Bhaktivatsal. This is his most important quality. So, Vatsa means chest. One of the many meanings. Vatsa also means calf, but it means chest. And La can be derived from Lati, which indicates Rakshati, or protection. So, it indicates that Krishna embraces to his chest Arjuna in loving embrace of affection and to protect him. So it can mean he who brings his devotees near him and gives them total protection. Therefore, Krishna is called Achyuta. And this denotes the Lord's Bhakta Vatsal quality. Prabhupada comments in the last paragraph, as a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna had no desire to fight with his cousins and brothers, but he was forced to come onto the battlefield by the obstinacy of Duryodhana, who was never agreeable to any peaceful negotiation. Therefore, he was very anxious to see who the leading persons present on the battlefield were. Although there was no question of a peacemaking endeavor on the battlefield, he wanted to see them again, and to see how much they were bent upon demanding an unwanted war. Text 23. Yutsyamanam avikshiham yaete trasamagataha dhartarashtrasya durbulhe nyudhe priya chikir shabaha. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. So Arjuna is still feeling quite valiant and fearless and ready to fight. So now, text 24. Sanjaya speaks. Sanjaya vacha eva mukto rishikesho gurakeshena bharata senayor ubayor madhye stapayit parathottamam. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. So, see that Krishna is called Rishikesh in this verse. Means one who controls all the senses. But now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that that Krishna, although he controls everyone's senses, is now himself being controlled by one of Arjuna's senses, the sense of speech. Because Arjuna is requesting him to bring his chariot in the middle of the armies. So because of love, Krishna allows himself to be controlled by Arjuna's sense of speech. Although he is Rishikesh, the control of the senses, that Arjuna is controlling him with his sense of speech by making a request. And Arjuna is called Gurakesh, which Guraka means sleep and Isha means controller. So it means the controller of sleep or and ignorance also. But there's also another meaning that Gura also means good or gur. Yeah, the sugar that you eat. Right? Indian sugar. Gur. So it means sweetness. And Akesha means A, Ka, and Isha, which are names for representing Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, the guna avatars. Yeah? So it indicates that Arjuna is receiving the sweet affection of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And that they couldn't possibly counteract a person like Arjuna, who is, by his speech, controlling the Parama Ishwara, Krishna. So one who receives sweet affection from the guna avatars is called Gurakesh. This is another meaning. So, and Prabhupada writes at the end of his commentary, thus a devotee can conquer both sleep and ignorance simply by thinking of Krishna constantly. This is called Krishna consciousness or samadhi. So that is how Arjuna conquered sleep and ignorance, because he's always thinking of Krishna. So we should follow in Arjuna's footsteps. As Rishikesh, or the director of the senses and mind of every living entity, and here's another interesting translation or connotation of the word Rishikesh by Prabhupada in his Tika. Rishikesh, as the director of the senses and mind of all jivas, could understand Arjuna's purpose in placing the chariot in the midst of the armies. Thus he did so, and therefore he spoke the following words. Right? So he's Rishikesh, knowing what's going on in Arjuna's mind. Which is very interesting, because now he says, so now what does he do? You have 40 miles of soldiers, right? Lined up in Kurukshetra battlefield. Bhishma Drona Pramukata Sarvesham Cha Mahikshitam Uvacha Parta Paishyaitam Samavetam Koruniti. He brings the chariot, Bhishma Drona Pramukata, right directly in front of Bhishma and Drona. He could have brought them anywhere, but he knows that Arjuna is very much attached to his grandfather. He loves him dearly. He used to sit on his lap as a child, and Bhishma would bless him and cuddle him and bless him with his hand. So he knows how attached he is to Bhishma. And Drona, he's his guru. And he brings him directly. And plus, not only is he in love with them, but he's also afraid of them because he knows that they're the most powerful fighters in the entire battlefield. So in order to incite Arjuna's confusion, which he knows is going to happen, because he can sense that it's coming now, therefore he's a Rishikesh. So then he says, just behold, Partha, all of the Kurus assembled here. They're just Kurus, right? But they're not just Kurus, they're Bhishma and Drona Kurus. Just see them. You wanted to see them, so now see. Paishyatan. Partha. So Prabhupada mentions, and the word Partha, the son of Kunti or Pritha, is also similarly significant in reference to Arjuna. As a friend, he wanted to inform Arjuna that because Arjuna was the son of Pritha, the sister of his own father, Vasudeva, he had agreed to be the charioteer of Arjuna. But, right, so he's saying that, okay, because you're a Partha, you're the son of my father's sister, I have agreed to drive your chariot. But now, after seeing your kinsman, you will very soon give up your desire to fight. So what is the use of your seeing the armies? And here, Prabhupada says that, so now what did Krishna mean when he told Arjuna to behold the Kuras? Did Arjuna want to stop there and not fight? Krishna never expected such things from the son of his aunt, Pritha. The mind of Arjuna was thus predicted by the Lord in friendly joking. Okay, because you're the son of my brother's sister, then my father's sister, then I have done this. But now you're telling me, now you're ready to stop fighting. Now what's this? Then what will I do? What is the use of me having come all the way here from Dwarka to fight for you? You're going to give up the desire to fight? So Krishna understood what was going on in his mind. And he says in the next verse, Tatra pushyat stitan partha pitrin atta pitamahan acharyan matulam batrin putran pautran sakim stata shvasaram suridas taiva senayor ubayorabhi. There Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and well-wishers. So Prabhupada comments and gives examples for each one of those categories in his purport. But again, Krishna refers to Arjuna as Partha. As that, okay, you wanted to see them, so now see them, O son of a woman, and now act like a woman, being sentimental and emotional, etc.
Tan samikshya sakonteya sarvan bandhun navastitan kripaya paraya vishto vishidan idam abravit.
When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. So we have the word kripaya, with compassion.
So
kripaya has the connotation of being merciful or compassionate to a certain set of known persons. But what, as opposed to the word daya, which means universal compassion for all beings, known or unknown. So Arjuna's compassion here is for his relatives. And he's feeling overwhelmed. Avishta, that means covered by this feeling. And paraya means very intensely, or very, very much, of a high grade. It's overwhelmed. And vishidam means that he was, while feeling lamentation for his sarva bandhun. Yeah, that means his relatives. There's bandhu, mitra, and surit. So they have different meanings. Bandhu means relative. So in all of these senses, and again he's being referred to as konti, konteya. So it means he's feeling compassion for his relatives in a fixed set, not the daya of a great sadhu who feels compassion for all beings. So this ends the first half of chapter 1. And you can, you know, compose some title for this section as you like. And then tomorrow we will ask you to recite them.